Well, hey there, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
So it has been a few weeks, but it's great to be back together.
It is good to be back. It is good to be back. And, you know, I feel like we might have some stuff to talk about this week. Is that possible?
Yeah. Yeah, there are a few things.
A few.
It's been, as we're used to right now, a very hectic news week. So let's just kind of, it's easy to kind of lose track of what actually happened Monday through Friday in this particular week. Let's do a little rundown, shall we, of what has happened in the last, you know, how many hours are in a week? I don't know. But
I
like
don't know.
That many hours.
Okay. Well, I'll start with one. There was a protest at the Capitol where protesters ripped down two iconic statues that are on the Capitol grounds, and some of them assaulted a state senator who is trying to take a video of the crowd.
Yes, that was obviously a pretty big deal. Wisconsin got some national attention for that one. And speaking of national attention, we also had the President of the United States and the Vice President in Wisconsin this week at two separate events. So it's a pretty big deal, I'd say.
Just another week, the President and Vice President show up. Oh, also, by the way, the Democratic National Convention, which we have talked about at length, which was going to showcase Milwaukee for all the world to see, it's not going to happen in the way that we kind of envisioned it a year ago. It's going to be mostly virtual. So Milwaukee's time to shine, not so much.
Yeah. And, you know, we can't help ourselves. We have to mention we got a new Marquette poll this week. I feel like normally perhaps we would have led with the Marquette poll. Now it's pretty far down the list, but we got some insight into the presidential race and how people in Wisconsin feel about the protests and all sorts of other stuff.
See, there are a few things that we should probably talk about this week, so let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, a few things that happened. So, guys, like we said in the intro, there is quite a bit of news that we need to get through in this podcast. Where do we start?
Well, we cover the Capitol, and the Capitol grounds physically have changed since we were there. Can we start there?
Yeah, I think we can start there.
Just kind of like describe what we saw this week in terms of protests at the Capitol. And you've probably heard by now that there are a couple statues missing from the Capitol. The forward statue on the State Street steps of the Capitol, which was a 1998 replica of a statue that stood outside the Capitol grounds for a century. And then the Colonel Hans Christian Haig statue, which was on the east entrance of the grounds. And that was a statue that was erected in the 1920s, I believe. And Hans Christian Haig was an abolitionist who died in the Civil War fighting the Confederate Army. So that has gotten some attention nationally. Of course, there are statues coming down all over the country. Forward is not a real person, but she was kind of an ideal for Wisconsin, used as a symbol recently for the women's suffrage movement. And then Colonel Haig was based on an actual person. And I think the fact that protesters took down the statue of an abolitionist got attention nationally, even as this is happening kind of everywhere right now.
So stepping back a little bit, in the last few weeks since we've done a podcast, it seems like there had been some quieting down of the protests in Madison. But then earlier this week, Tuesday night, there was this protest, this renewed protest at the Capitol following the arrest of a black activist in Madison who apparently was inside a restaurant, acting disruptive, and then was arrested by Madison police out in the streets, and it was videotaped, and it was a pretty rough arrest. And so that's sort of what started this protest that we saw this week.
Yeah, and you're right. It was for a few weeks. You had a lot of demonstrations, which we would describe, I think, as disruptive, but peaceful. You know, that you didn't see the widespread property damage that you saw in the early days of the protests. You didn't see the clashes with police. And because we haven't podcasted in a few weeks, and I have been sort of rethinking like what we said in our last podcast, where I think at that time I was thinking like, gosh, is this like an Occupy Wall Street situation that's just going to go on and on through the summer? And then I felt kind of stupid because like, well, it doesn't seem like that. And I'm rambling here, but I think the point is that like, we don't know what this movement is going to be like at any point in time. We don't know what we're going to be talking about next week or the week after. And in this case, the protest mood changed very quickly with the arrest of Devonare Johnson, who goes by the name of Yeshua Musa. He was arrested after, and this is because a lot of this stuff happens on the Capitol Square and because everybody has a camera on their phone these days. A lot of this is documented. He walked into a restaurant on the Capitol Square with a megaphone, carrying a baseball bat, and disrupted the restaurant, let people know he was carrying a bat because he saw somebody taking a video of it. Police came, confronted him. You know, John, you referenced the arrest, which was, there's cameras all over the place. There's activists taking video of the arrest. And that was when the protests got pretty heated. And by that night, you saw the two statues get pulled down. The statue of Colonel Haig got rolled a half mile to Lake Monona, where it was dumped into the lake. I, at one point in the night, was down there, and I was at a distance, but I'm pretty sure I saw some kids go by on skateboards with the head of Colonel Haig under their arm. It was one of the many moments where you're just kind of like, this is surreal. But anyway, that arrest is kind of what sparked the protests that night. And you also saw the Capitol, which had basically been spared during this, the Capitol building itself. Protesters started breaking windows in the Capitol, you know, breaking some lamps outside the Capitol. I think the fact that we haven't gotten to this yet shows that we have a lot to talk about. State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee was in the crowd that night, and he went to take, he said he was going to take a picture. He was taking a video, and protesters told him, you know, not to record. And they went up to him, and you know, he posted a video on Twitter of what he saw. It ends pretty abruptly when they go to take his phone. And then we know from eyewitnesses who were there, Carpenter was punched by, you know, a group of people. He said he was punched and kicked. He estimated it at like 6 to 8 people. So it mean that is by definition violent too. You know, we always are careful with the words we use to describe this stuff, but obviously it turned violent that night.
And so that's what happened Tuesday night and into the wee hours of Wednesday morning. And then by later Wednesday, we had a bunch of reactions sort of from Wisconsin politicians, from the governor, from leaders of the legislature, from other folks. What did we hear them say?
Well, I think what's notable here is that we haven't necessarily seen, well, we just haven't seen a unified response from politicians on both sides of the aisle to the protests thus far. And we saw that on Wednesday. There's been kind of an ongoing conversation about protesters' actions and, you know, whether they're disruptive or kind of the role of the actions of some protesters in destroying property and, you know, how much that should be focused on and how much concern that should bring up among, you know, government, basically. And so we've seen, particularly between Republican lawmakers that have been very concerned about the lack of enforcement, about property damage, and Democratic lawmakers who say, you know, we shouldn't be as concerned about buildings and glass as we are about people and the movement. What we saw on Wednesday really was Democrats joining Republicans in saying what happened the night before and early that morning wasn't okay. And it was talking, I think, primarily about not the statues, though the statues were kind of controversial this time because of what they stood for, you know, the abolitionist soldier and forward, which, as Sean mentioned, you know, has been associated with women's suffrage. It was really the assault on Senator Carpenter that got a lot of people saying, you know, this violence that was involved in the events of the night before, you know, some people engaging in that is just not acceptable and we can't have that. And so you saw this sort of unified response. And then the one split that did happen, at least kind of earlier in the day on Wednesday, was Republicans saying, okay, enough is enough. We feel like, you know, Democratic leaders from the governor to the mayor of Madison just haven't done enough to kind of bring law enforcement quickly to these events. And they called on the governor to activate the National Guard, which he had, of course, done previously for these protests. But the Guard's mission had ended earlier this month. So that was kind of the initial response. And as the day went on, actually, the governor did reactivate. I don't know if reactivate is actually the right word. He activated again the National Guard to be present at protests in Dane County, kind of in response to that night. But we haven't seen anything like that since.
Aside from the governor making that decision to activate the National Guard again, I mean, I think part of the other response that we heard from politicians to this night of chaotic protesting with people in the Republican Party and even some Democrats essentially saying, you know, this isn't how change is accomplished, that this sort of violence and destruction isn't going to get what you want. That was sort of the response that we got from elected officials.
Yeah, I mean, that you really got that response from pretty much everybody across the board in a leadership position at the Capitol. Speaker Voss said violent protest is, this is a quote from a press conference that he did Wednesday morning, violent protest is the exact opposite of how change will occur. Representative Gordon Hintz, who's of course the minority leader in the assembly, said, violently attacking a state senator and damaging state property does not in any way help to make positive change. So you again kind of had this unified response, not only in decrying the violence, but saying, you know, this type of protest, in our view, isn't going to motivate us as state lawmakers to do. That's my dog.
We are recording from home, Stan.
Yeah. Saying, like, that's, you know, as state lawmakers, this type of action isn't going to motivate us to do the things that you want us to do. Which, you know, the legislative proposals are out there. The governor has a set of bills out related to criminal justice in Wisconsin. The speaker said that he's having ongoing conversations with a number of people in the Capitol and outside the Capitol about kind of legislative response. So we know that that's in the works in you know, certain ways. But basically what they said after this was, hey, this isn't making it any easier or making it go any faster.
And I would say the counterpoint that I've heard from demonstrators that I've heard since that night is, I don't hear them saying, well, it was bad what happened or anything. You know, I haven't heard like remorse that the statues came down from people who were out there protesting. And you talk about like, what's going to cause change to happen at the state level. Yeah, it's not going to help. And if you're a Democrat that has to be on the ballot, probably you don't want to have to be talking about statues being pulled from their pedestal at the Capitol. But at a local level, what happened like the next day in Madison? the mayor announced that an agreement had been reached to remove police, you know, school resource officers from the city's high schools. You know, that was announced the day after these protests. So, I mean, I think the people who are protesting see kind of a connection, right? They were basically ignored for a few weeks when the protests were peaceful. What happened the day after that they weren't peaceful? A result was announced. I know it's kind of dangerous to link the two, but it happened the day after, and they viewed it as victory. Being at the protest on Thursday, they viewed that as like a win.
I know we have a lot more to get to, but just before we switch topics real quick, in terms of, you know, where protests could go from here, obviously we don't know and news changes so quickly, but a couple of items. One, Yeshua Musa, the man who was arrested and which sort of kicked off this night of violent protest, has been charged with a federal crime in the case of what prosecutors say is extorting money from the restaurant that he was in. And then also, the same night as the protests were going on, a young black woman in Madison was sprayed with lighter fluid and lit on fire by a group of four white men, she says, as she was driving downtown. And the case is being investigated as a hate crime. So there's still sort of some pretty intense stuff going on, and we're not sure exactly, you know, how that's going to affect the protests and the response to things.
Yeah, we're not. And, you know, in the meantime, while the protests have been calm by comparison the last couple nights, there have been police and National Guard stationed at, I don't know if every window, but according to reporters who've been down there, you know, nearly every window of the Capitol, just kind of standing guard. So things are not back to normal yet, for sure.
So sort of switching gears here, but I promise there is actually sort of a segue in this. Both Vice President Mike Pence and President Donald Trump were in Wisconsin this week for different events. Mike Pence in town earlier in the week on Tuesday for a school choice event with the education secretary, and then also kicking off this faith-centered campaign initiative. But then Donald Trump in town on Thursday for a visit to a shipbuilding factory in Marinette and recording a town hall event for Fox News in the Green Bay area. And the segue is that during this wide-ranging interview, he brought up the protest that had happened in Wisconsin, the assault of Tim Carpenter and the statues and such. But then also there's the whole sort of political significance of the vice president and the president here on the same week, sort of highlighting Wisconsin's electoral importance come November.
Yeah, I mean, I think these weren't official campaign events, but they highlighted some things that are pretty important to the Trump campaign. You know, the president was at the He was at Marinette Marine, which got a $5.5 billion contract from the federal government to build ships. So, you know, highlighting economic development and job creation there. As you said, John, Pence was talking about school choice and religious beliefs and kind of the role of that in society. So, you know, issues that are important there to the base. And they did get to talk about some of these, of course, big events that are going on. The president weighed in on the protests and said that he believed if Scott Walker were still governor of Wisconsin, that the protest on Tuesday night would not have gone the way that it did. He also said that he thought that Senator Carpenter was probably rooting on the protesters. He said, actually, quote, "Democrats think it's wonderful that they're destroying our country." So, you know, we have the president and the vice president here kind of showcasing how important Wisconsin is and kind of playing into these themes that we know are important to their campaigns, but they're also weighing in on just the day-to-day things that are going on here and certainly making headlines with those comments.
Yeah, one of the things I saw pointed out by a lot of folks locally after Trump's comments about Walker was that, you know, Walker himself saw huge protests under his administration because of Act 10. And so it's not just something that, you know, happens under Democratic leadership.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff that Trump said there and the argument over what would have happened under Walker, I know we're drifting back to the first topic here, but I feel like this is an argument we're going to hear for the next couple years, you know, potentially until Governor Tony Evers' election. I don't know, because so much happens now. Like, a month feels like a year. Who knows what a couple of years is going to feel like and what we'll be talking about then. But you do see it coming up a lot about how this was handled. And of course, the Act 10 protests were much bigger than what you're seeing right now. But there wasn't property damage. And I think that's sort of the distinction that's being made. Although Act 10 protests were also used by Republicans against Democrats in campaigns in key state Senate districts. Oh, one thing, he did what the president said about Senator Carpenter. I mean, I don't think Senator Carpenter and people who saw him didn't really see him like rooting for the protests. He was there, but I think people who saw him said he just like was there getting ready to take a picture. So he responded to the president telling the Journal Sentinel, quote, "I don't know what's worse, the beating or having someone turn something so personal that happened to you and weaponize it against you." He said he hasn't slept since that happened. So there you go.
So moving things along, because we do have quite a few things to talk about on this podcast, we got some new polling data this week from Marquette University, which kind of speaks to what we've already been speaking to. There were questions regarding people's views on the Black Lives Matter protests and about President Trump and a bunch of other things. What did we hear from Marquette this week?
Well, I think it's really important to mention before we say any of these numbers that this poll was conducted before the protest on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. So any sort of change in public perception that might have happened because of that protest being different than ones we have seen in the past wouldn't be reflected in this poll. So with that being said, I think one of the big takeaways for me was the pretty low approval for the president in terms of how he's handled protests. The poll had 30% approval and 58% disapproval in terms of how he's handled it. Overall approval of the protests in general, so just kind of the movement, 61% of people view them favorably, 36% unfavorably. And when you look at specifically, I thought these two were really interesting. So when you look at specifically the Black Lives Matter movement, that approval goes down a little bit from the 61% for the protests to 59% approval. But approval of the police is at 72%. So I just always think it's fascinating as we're having kind of these discussions and sort of evolving opinions, and as Sean mentioned earlier, you know, sort of daily news events that can change what these things look like and what the conversations are, to get a little snapshot in time to see where people across the state are and kind of how they're viewing it as it's happening.
And then, of course, the other thing that we sort of look at as every Marquette poll comes out in the year 2020, we have some new numbers about the presidential election coming up. What did those show?
Those showed that, you know, Joe Biden is in as good of a place as he has been basically since Marquette started polling head-to-head between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, right? I mean, that, you know, you see Donald Trump's numbers way underwater on the issues of the day, you know, the protests and COVID-19. Those are bringing the president down. And Joe Biden, who is basically not out there campaigning, you know, is basically just kind of letting this be an election about Donald Trump. Joe Biden is benefiting from Donald Trump's low numbers in those areas. So that's the snapshot of the race today. And we're always like a little nervous about talking about polling because we've seen what can happen. But that is where things stand right now. And of course, Joe Biden is happy to be on that end of it.
We should
numbers.
Yeah, I was going to say we should say the specific numbers.
I just thought I'd describe them generally. Whatever. It's a podcast.
Do you want to say it, John, or do you want me to?
I can do it. Okay. Yeah, those specific numbers, Biden 49%, Trump at 41%, which is a growth of Biden's lead from last month where Biden was leading 46-43.
Those are probably the exact numbers that listeners had in mind when they heard me describing the state of the race. So kind of redundant, but, you know, whatever, whatever.
When you speak in generalities, I speak in facts.
Burn. I think what's interesting here, if I can say one more thing about the numbers before we move on, is that the margin of error for this poll was pretty typical for what we see for a Marquette poll, about 4 points. It was 4.3 percentage points. So Biden's lead is 8 points now. So it's interesting that he's getting closer to being outside of that margin of error. I think we're so used to in these polls saying like,
oh, it's super close.
Within the margin of error, within the
numbers,
margin of error.
Yeah, you know, anybody could be winning, but it's getting to be like Joe Biden, because there were other polls released this week also that had an even better situation for Joe Biden, and not just in Wisconsin, kind of all over the place.
Well, speaking of Joe Biden and his status as the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party in November, the plan was for him to accept the nomination in Milwaukee during the Democratic National Convention. And we learned this week, while Biden is still expected to be in Milwaukee, a lot of the, you know, other thousands and thousands of people that were supposed to be here this summer are no longer going to be here because of the ongoing COVID-19 situation.
Yeah, I remember a simpler time when we thought that the Democratic National Convention coming to Milwaukee would be like the biggest story that we covered in 2020. And it turns out that that's not going to be the case. And that while there still will be something of a convention in Milwaukee, it will not be, you know, all these people descending upon the city in the way that we expected. So it's kind of a big deal for Milwaukee specifically, of course, for Wisconsin and, you know, our egos, which we really wanted to have all that attention because we're so important. But Milwaukee specifically, that's pretty rough for them. And the economic bounce they were going to get is not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that economic bounce had been estimated somewhere around like $200 million. So, I mean, this is financially a really big deal for Milwaukee. You know, in addition to kind of the symbolic, you know, gathering of people in a state that's seen as pretty important in the election, when they made this announcement, which is something we've been looking for a long time, honestly. I mean, you know, the convention had already been bumped back from July to August. And so I think a lot of watchers were sort of thinking like, you know, what's going to happen here? How much of a like physical presence is it going to have? And basically part of the announcement this week was like state delegates are not going to be in Wisconsin. They're all going to vote remotely. There are still going to be some like live broadcasts and that sort of element. And some of those will be from Milwaukee, but there will also be broadcasts and sort of events at other parts of the country that are kind of beamed in, I guess, to the broadcast. it just makes me think of these virtual campaign events that we've covered and just kind of how different and surreal those feel. I think it's going to feel that way for the convention as well, just sort of kind of watching this thing unfold online and remotely, and how differently that, you know, just how differently that feels for the party. These events are supposed to be like big, kind of rah-rah, like what's the pep rally sort of thing, you know? It's supposed to be energetic and exciting, and it's not going to be, without people physically present, how are they going to do that?
A virtual rah-rah, perhaps. I don't know.
What do virtual rah-rahs look like? We're going to find out, I guess.
Well, right now they look like the campaign strategy for the Democratic Party, which is sticking to virtual campaigning as Republicans kind of resume actual field campaigning, knocking on doors and seeing people in person. So the virtual rah-rah is Biden's 2020 strategy at this point.
If they use that as any sort of logo or motto or anything, I really hope I get some recognition. Just putting that out there.
All right.
You just want those royalties.
Right. It's compelling. What can I say?
Well, we have gotten through a lot, certainly there. It was good to reconvene with you guys to talk about all of the things that happened this week. Or at least a few of them. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
You can get your own little dose of virtual rah-rah delivered to you almost every single week when you subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And of course, you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime by going to wpr.org/politics.